Well, to another learned gent, our legal correspondent, Dean Knight. Good morning to you.
Kia ora, how are you, Catherine?
Good, thank you. Associate Professor, Faculty of Law and New Zealand Centre for Public Law, Victoria University of Wellington. I'm sure there's been some good discussions, and I'm conscious of some, around the legal niceties of this exceptional, maybe second in history, action by the New Zealand government and the legal basis for it. Has it been tested, Dean?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it's been fascinating. It's been somewhat of a rolling wall. It's been occupying the legal thinkers for a while, and we had a chat for about a month ago, and since then, there's been some interesting shifts along the way which have taken us into some interesting territory. You recall about 4 weeks when we last chat, we had this funny notice under an important notice under the Health Act, which had some pretty simple and straightforward legal rules, closing some premises and except for essential services, and banning congregation without physical distancing. But that was kind of a step up about 10 days into the lockdown in early April, where the Director General issued another Section 70 notice, which applied for the bulk of the Level 4 lockdown, where he formally directed everybody in New Zealand to isolate at home, apart from specific instances of essential personal movement, as we've become quite familiar with what was possible and what was not. But there's been some discussions about that, and there's been a sort of odd court case that's kind of tested it. So it might be useful, I said, sort of set out what the power is and then explain what the debate is, and then come back to the case and how it's been tested, because I'm not sure the case itself has really resolved the legal question that's been the chatter amongst all of the virtual halls of law schools and elsewhere around the country.
Go ahead.
Well, the power that's been used of, we talked about before, the Health Act, and the specific power being used that raised a few eyebrows was Section 71F, which allowed a medical officer's health to require persons, places, buildings, ships, vehicles, aircraft, animals and things to be isolated, quarantined or disinfected as he thinks fit. So that's what the bulk of the lockdown has relied on, where we got told that we all of us had to stay at home, except we're allowed this permission to move and evolve. And that power is one that you can trace back to public health legislation in England in the 19th century. So it's an old sort of pretty blunt style of expressing a power and giving it to a medical officer of health. And you recall from last time, our Director General exercises a medical officer of health powers across the whole country. But the big debate comes down to whether this question about requiring persons was applicable generally to all persons in New Zealand, or whether it was intended to deal with individual ad hoc instances where some local medical officer goes out to a building and requires it to be disinfected, or requires someone with a particular disease to be isolated. And, you know, looking at that myself, I think it seems to be stretching it a bit, at least beyond its designed intentions. And some eyebrows raised given the huge impact on the civil liberties that are engaged, and suggestions that care should be taken with using that power, and it should be read pretty narrowly.
But have you seen, just before you carry on, some knowledgeable, learned, experienced legal figures say essentially this lockdown has no basis in law? Because I have.
Yeah, two of my colleagues, Professors Andrew Geddes and Claudia Gweiringer, did an important blog and analysis on the constitutional law blog in the UK, and they've repeated it in the spin-off earlier this week, where they're rightly raising that question about whether that is a firm foundation of what the lockdown was. So, you know, it's squarely been raised, and I should say that on the other side, the Attorney General was questioned before the Estimate Response Committee about this, and he actually signalled that he was comfortable with it, and he'd got advice saying that, you know, it was capable of being relied on, and there's some arguments that can be made. You know, it's emergency legislation that's relied on extraordinary times, and there's some other sort of weedy stuff in the other parts of the legislation about how you read the two together. So there's very much a live legal issue. It's a debate point. For myself, I think I fall in the middle and thinking, yeah, there is a question mark there, and we want to be able to prudently sort of work through that and think about that. I also expect
Well, that would be the challenge in lockdown, wouldn't it? That would be the challenge. It's the sort of stuff you could hear people debating in the Supreme Court, potentially, but what do you do in the middle of a four-week order? That, to be fair, whatever the directive was could only take effect with the voluntary compliance of a populace. No matter what its legal basis.
There's been great success in that in the New Zealand instances of high degree of compliance. It goes back, and we talked about that last time, very strong, clear signalling, and I describe it as sort of nudges from the Prime Minister about the right thing to do. And I'm not one that necessarily wants to sort of pick apart the regime, but, you know, there have been some people along the way that have a little bit more concerned and raised it. And we had a couple of cases last week where a couple of people challenged the legality of the lockdown in kind of a roundabout way. And if you remember in our discussions, ultimately it's the courts that have the final say in our system. Questions of legality fall with the judiciary. So we got a little sneak peek from the court last week, where a couple of people applied for what's called habeas corpus, which is an old ancient remedy where someone gets to test the legality of their detention. And I think the Latin means deliver the body, the idea of delivering up the body to ensure that they were lawfully detained. And curiously, one of the people bringing in the challenge was someone, as it happened, who was serving a sentence of home detention. But that wasn't what they were complaining about. They're complaining about that very order that had been issued by the Director General and those arguments you were saying about whether it applied generally or only to specific people.
Okay. So yes. That's the point. Was the order applied generally in a circumstance where it was legally, were it to have been tested, legally wouldn't have stood up? But the point I was trying to make is it wouldn't have stood up in practice without the co-relationship between a legal order to be tested and the actual voluntary compliance, voluntary, not legally enforced, voluntary compliance of the populace.
And nobody's trying to turn the clock back and change what's happened. We've had high degree of compliance, but there may be some rats and mice around the edges where if someone's been prosecuted for breaching the order, they might be able to, in that prosecution, raise the question of the lawfulness of the order they might win, they might fail, it might mean they're not convicted. You know, there might be the possibility of some civil claims for, you know, damages under the Bill of Rights Act down the path. But it's not going to go back and change that high degree of compliance that we've achieved. So,
well, unless it's required again, Dean. So just give us the to and fro. Like, from those who've taken one stance or the other, does it all boil down to how you interpret that wording?
Yeah, absolutely. Require persons to be isolated as he thinks fit. You know, is that, and there's some things that suggest it's not intended to be general. There's other parts of the Act that where there's a general notice to close premises that needs to be notified in a local newspaper, whereas this one doesn't have that notification requirement, which we'd normally expect if this was a power being exercised at large. But there's another provision in the Health Act that deals with isolation in slightly different terms. So I kind of think there's arguments different both ways on that are capable of being made. And the interesting thing in coming back to these habeas corpus cases is, and I need to put on record, that the first High Court judge to look at it ultimately said, albeit in a sort of a non-binding aside, something called obiter, she thought that the orders were valid and could apply to all persons within New Zealand. As it happened, she didn't need to make that finding because she found that the person wasn't actually detained in the terms of this old age remedy, because they could still, in principle, go out, or their family could go out to exercise or go to the supermarket. So there was no detention. But if there was detention, she leant to the view that order authorising that isolation was valid. But one of the things that's awkward in those habeas corpus applications, not really designed for that sort of generalised survey and understanding of whether this has been valid and whether it's got the firm legal foundation. And that's a reasonably complex argument that should be made by way of a judicial review application. And I expect the Crown of lawyers would throw everything at, because it's been central to our lockdown regime. So I think there's more to say, and there could be more to see on that point as it comes up in the future.
It sounds like it needs resolving, frankly, because while we hope to the heavens that we are not put into any kind of a similar situation again, it could arise. And would it be, as I just said, the proper place for this to be debated is in a forum where people are testing the law to its, you know, in a proper and educated forum, through to the point even of going to a Supreme Court. But it would it not make sense to sort it now, given the situation is hardly over?
Well, I what's interesting with the new level restrictions, they've still relied on a similar, on that Section 70 notice power, but with different rules. So the reason the Crown seems reasonably comfortable using that rule, there is the opportunity. We don't know what's happening in Parliament today. There's omnibus legislation being foreshadowed. And it could be that there's either validation legislation or some tweaks to the Health Act to give it a stronger legal footing. But I think what the government's foreshadowing is probably level two will have a different take a different shift into different territory where they'll issue some bespoke legislation.
Always so interesting. Thank you very much, Dr. Dean Knight, Associate Professor, Faculty of Law and New Zealand Centre for Public Law, Victoria University of Wellington.